This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of radial tunnel syndrome from the hand section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick summary. Radial tunnel syndrome is a compressive neuropathy of the posterior interosseous nerve, or PIN, at the level of the proximal forearm at the radial tunnel. Diagnosis is made clinically with pain only, without any motor or sensory dysfunction. Maximal tenderness will be found 3 to 5 centimeters distal to the lateral epicondyle. Treatment is a prolonged course of conservative management with NSAIDs, temporary splinting, and corticosteroid injections with radial tunnel decompression reserved for refractory cases. Now, let's get into the episode. With respect to epidemiology, the incidence of radial tunnel syndrome is rare, making up approximately 3 per 100,000 cases annually. In terms of the demographics, males are more commonly affected than females. Moving on to etiology, with respect to pathophysiology, radial tunnel syndrome involves the same sites of compression as PIN syndrome, and includes, from proximal to distal, the fibrous bands anterior to the radiocapitellar joint, the radial recurrent vessels, otherwise known as the leash of Henry, the medial edge of the ECRB, the proximal aponeurotic slash tendinous edge of the supinator, otherwise known as the arcade of Froesch, and the distal edge of the superficial layer of the supinator. With respect to the proximal aponeurotic slash tendinous edge of the supinator, or the arcade of Froesch, this is the most frequent site of entrapment of the PIN. Keep in mind that normal radial tunnel pressure is 50 millimeters of mercury, and with the supinator stretch, that is forced wrist flexion, pressure increases to 250 millimeters of mercury. Risk factors for radial tunnel syndrome include constant pronosupination with 1 kilogram of force and the elbow in 0 to 45 degrees of flexion. Associated conditions include lateral epicondylitis. Keep in mind that radial tunnel syndrome is difficult to distinguish from lateral epicondylitis and coexists in 5% of patients. Now let's talk about some relevant anatomy. We'll go over the radial tunnel and the PIN. The radial tunnel is 5 centimeters in length, and from the level of the radiocapitellar joint, extends distally past the proximal edge of the supinator. The boundaries laterally are the brachioradialis, ECRL, and ECRB. The boundaries medially are the biceps tendon and the brachialis, and the floor is the capsule of the radiocapitellar joint. Moving on to the PIN, in terms of origin, the PIN is a branch of the radial nerve that provides motor innervation to the extensor compartment. In terms of the course, it passes between the two heads of origin of the supinator muscle. There's also direct contact with the radial neck osteology, passes over the abductor pollicis longus muscle origin to reach the interosseous membrane, and traverses along the posterior interosseous membrane. Moving on to innervation, we'll talk about the motor and sensory innervation of the PIN. So starting with motor, the PIN innervates the common extensors, such as the ECRB, which is often from the radial nerve proper but can be from the PIN, the extensor digitorum communis, or the EDC, the extensor digiti minimi, or the EDM, and the extensor carpi ulnaris, or the ECU. The PIN also innervates the deep extensors, such as the supinator, the abductor pollicis longus, or the APL, the extensor pollicis brevis, or the EPB, the extensor pollicis longus, or the EPL, and the extensor indicis proprius, or the EIP. Moving on to sensory innervation, the PIN provides sensory fibers through the dorsal wrist capsule, which is provided by the terminal branch, which is located on the floor of the fourth extensor compartment. Know that there is no cutaneous innervation of the PIN. Moving on to presentation of radial tunnel syndrome, symptoms include deep aching pain in the dorsal radial proximal forearm. Specifically, this will be from the lateral elbow to the wrist and increases during forearm rotation and lifting activities. Patients may also have muscle weakness, but because of pain and not muscle denervation. On physical exam, patients may have tenderness over the mobile wad over the supinator arch, and maximal tenderness will be 3 to 5 centimeters distal to the lateral epicondyle. This is more distal than lateral epicondylitis. Provocative tests include resisted long finger extension, which reproduces pain at the radial tunnel, and patients may have weakness because of pain. Other provocative tests include the resisted supination test with the elbow and wrist in extension. This reproduces pain at the radial tunnel, and again, patients may have weakness because of pain. Another provocative test is passive pronation with wrist flexion, which reproduces pain at the radial tunnel. Passive stretch of the supinator muscle increases pressure inside the radial tunnel to 250 millimeters of mercury. Normal is 50 millimeters of mercury. Finally, the radial tunnel injection test is diagnostic if the injection leads to a PIN palsy and relieves pain. On sensory exam, again, there is no cutaneous sensory manifestations of radial tunnel syndrome. If changes present in the first dorsal web space, consider a more proximal pathology. And finally, in terms of motor exam, there will be no motor manifestations of radial tunnel syndrome. Moving on to imaging, MRI is usually negative. However, can be indicated to identify muscle changes in muscles innervated by the PIN. For example, denervation edema slash atrophy within the supinator slash extensor muscles. Another indication for MRI is to evaluate compression sites. For example, an MRI may show a thickened edge of the ECRB, prominent radial recurrent vessels, otherwise known as the leash of Henry, and swelling of the PIN. An MRI can also be used to identify other causes of entrapment, which are rare. For example, tumors, ganglia, radiocapitellar synovitis, bicipital bursitis, radial head fractures, and dislocations. Now, let's talk about some other studies, such as electrodiagnostic studies and diagnostic injections. Electrodiagnostic studies, like EMG slash nerve conduction studies, are inconclusive because the PIN carries unmyelinated group 4 fibers, or C fibers for nociception, and small myelinated group 2A afferent fibers, which are responsible for temperature. EMG slash nerve conduction studies are also inconclusive because pressure on these fibers produces pain, and these fibers cannot be evaluated by EMG slash nerve conduction studies. Know that the large myelinated fibers of the PIN remain normal, producing a normal EMG slash nerve conduction velocity. In terms of diagnostic injection, injection of local anesthetic into the area of localized tenderness ensures that local anesthetic does not spread to the lateral epicondyle. Moving on to differential diagnosis of radial tunnel syndrome, the ones to consider include lateral epicondylitis and cervical radiculopathy at C6, C7. In terms of lateral epicondylitis, both radial tunnel syndrome and lateral epicondylitis can coexist in 5% of patients. In lateral epicondylitis, tenderness is directly over the lateral epicondyle. However, in radial tunnel syndrome, tenderness is 3 to 5 centimeters distal to the lateral epicondyle. Moving on to cervical radiculopathy at C6, C7, electrodiagnostic studies may show denervation. To learn more about lateral epicondylitis and cervical radiculopathy, be sure to look out for those podcast episodes. Moving on to diagnosis of radial tunnel syndrome, this is a clinical diagnosis, and the diagnosis is made with careful history and physical examination. Treatment of radial tunnel syndrome can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes activity modification, temporary splinting and NSAIDs, as well as corticosteroid injections. Indications for activity modification, temporary splinting, and NSAIDs is the first line of treatment for at least 1 year. In terms of technique of activity modification, avoid prolonged elbow extension with forearm pronation and wrist flexion. A corticosteroid injection is indicated for both diagnostic and therapeutic purposes. In terms of outcomes, there is 70% improvement at 6 weeks, and patients are typically 60% pain-free at 2 years. Operative options include a radial tunnel release, which is indicated in the setting of extensive non-operative treatment fails. In terms of outcomes, surgical release has disappointing results, as there is only 50 to 90% good to excellent results, and there is delayed maximal recovery of up to 9 to 18 months. Radial tunnel release also has a lower success rate in the following groups. Concomitant multiple entrapment neuropathies only has success in 60% of patients, concomitant lateral epicondylitis only has success in 40% of patients, and workers' compensation patients only have success in 30% of cases. Now let's quickly talk about the surgical technique for a radial tunnel release in a bit more detail. The approach is the dorsal approach to the PIN, and three planes have been described: between the ECRB and the EDC, between the brachioradialis and the ECRL, and a transmuscular brachioradialis splitting approach. There's also an anterior approach to the PIN, which is between the brachioradialis and the biceps. The technique is to release the arcade of Froch, release the distal edge of the supinator, and release fibrous bands superficial to the radiocapitellar joint. In terms of outcomes, the success rate of surgical decompression is 70 to 90%. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 52-year-old construction worker presents with pain in the right proximal dorsal radial forearm over the last 8 months. He reports that his pain is worsened when using a screwdriver and lifting heavy objects. On exam, there is tenderness over the radial head and mobile wand, and pain with resisted supination and resisted third finger extension. There is no tenderness over the lateral epicondyle. There is no appreciable motor weakness or sensory deficits. Electromyography reveals no abnormalities. His AP and lateral radiographs of the right elbow do not show any apparent pathology. The patient has not sought any treatment up until this point. What is the likely diagnosis and first-line treatment? And the choices are 1. Radial tunnel syndrome, physical therapy and activity modification, 2. Lateral epicondylitis and debridement of the extensor carpi radialis brevis, 3. PIN syndrome and surgical release of the leash of Henry and arcade of Froch, 4. Radial tunnel syndrome and steroid injection into the radial tunnel, and 5. Lateral epicondylitis and steroid injection into the lateral epicondyle. The correct answer to this question is 1. Radial tunnel syndrome and physical therapy as well as activity modification. So the patient is presenting with radial tunnel syndrome, which is initially treated with exhaustive physical therapy and activity modification. To quickly review, radial tunnel syndrome results from pathologic compression of the radial nerve in the proximal dorsoradial forearm. This presents without any of the motor or sensory changes that are characteristic of PIN compression syndrome and Wartenberg syndrome. Despite the similar presentation of both PIN syndrome and radial tunnel syndrome, the treatment for both remains the same. Initial treatment involves physical therapy and activity modification and night bracing for a minimum of 1 year. Patients with persistent pain may be amenable to surgical release of the arcade of Froch, the distal edge of the supinator, and fiber spans superficial to the radiocapitellar joint. A posterior approach is preferred as this allows safe access to the supinator and the distal edge. An anterior approach is usually performed when there is a mass demonstrated on MRI that would be inadequately decompressed posteriorly. Soterianos et al. Performed a retrospective study on surgical release outcomes for radial tunnel syndrome in mostly workmen's compensation cases. They found that surgical release was associated with 54% fair to poor outcomes and only 21% of patients returned to their previous level of employment. The authors concluded that surgical release of the radial tunnel in workmen's compensation patients to be associated with poor outcomes. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 2, pain centered over the lateral epicondyle and is worsened with wrist extension is characteristic of lateral epicondylitis. Debridement of the extensor carpi radialis brevis is the surgical treatment for refractory lateral epicondylitis. Answer 3, PIN syndrome typically presents with dorsal wrist pain and associated thumb, wrist, and finger extension weakness and pain reproducible with resisted supination. The leash of Henry and arcade of Froch are potential sites of compression in radial tunnel syndrome and PIN syndrome. However, surgical treatment is not indicated until exhaustive conservative treatment has failed. Answer 4, steroid injection into the radial tunnel is a second-line treatment option for radial tunnel syndrome as well as diagnostic test. Diagnosis can be confirmed if there is relief of symptoms in PIN palsy and radial tunnel syndrome after the injection. And finally, answer 5, steroid injection into the lateral epicondyle is a treatment option for lateral epicondylitis. However, at 1 year, there have been no outcome differences between physical therapy alone and corticosteroid injections for the treatment of lateral epicondylitis. And moving on to the final question, what is the most common site of posterior interosseous nerve compression in radial tunnel syndrome? And the choices are 1, fiber span superficial to the radiocapitellar joint, 2, radial recurrent artery branches, otherwise known as the leash of Henry, 3, fibrous edge of the supinator, otherwise known as the arcade of Froch, 4, distal edge of the supinator, and 5, tendinous margin of the extensor carpi radialis brevis, or ECRB. The correct answer to this question is 3, fibrous edge of the supinator or arcade of Froch. So the 5 compression sites described in radial tunnel syndrome are the distal edge of the supinator, fiber span superficial to the radiocapitellar joint, tendinous margin of the extensor carpi radialis brevis or ECRB, radial recurrent artery or leash of Henry, and the most common site of compression, the fibrous edge of the supinator or arcade of Froch. The tendinous portion of the supinator is next to the bone and does not compress the posterior interosseous nerve. That's all for this review about radial tunnel syndrome. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.